Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, joined by Liz Hilton, who is the inventor, founder, and owner of Swaddlini, where she makes, and their company makes, beautiful swaddles for babies to be able to give, help babies sleep well, but even more importantly, help parents and mothers and fathers be able to actually get some sleep at night, as opposed to listen to the baby cry nonstop. Something that was born out of her own experience, her own life journey. And we talk about, this is a really fun one. Liz is has a ton of energy, a ton of enthusiasm. And before we hopped on, she gave me a sneak peek of her warehouse and her factory floor, which is just right outside her office. A couple of things that really surprised me that we get into. She just finished up 8 months of doing traditional PR, not something that a lot of e-com owners, I think, are doing these days. We're talking about what she learned, if it was worth it, how she built a nearly 200,000 subscriber YouTube channel in just a few years. We talk about a long-form documentary that the brand just invested in and the lessons from that, why they're doing it, if she thinks it's going to be an ROI positive thing or not, and how it's been received. And also get into one of the moments that kind of brought her to her knees early on in the business. So talk about a lot of fun stuff. Very cool business that she has built up, and was a blast having her on.
Real quick, once a year, we survey members of the Ecom Fuel private community, our community for seven and eight figure operators and owners, to figure out what's really happening in the industry. Not on X, not what you heard, that kind of, but not theory, not hot takes, just data from 300 store owners representing $3.5 billion in revenue. Our report for this year is out. It's free. And there are findings in there that will make you rethink at least one or two things you're doing right now, I promise. You can go download it, check it out at ecommercefuel.com/blueprint to learn all the details. All right, let's get into the episode. Liz, I'm excited for this. Already in like 5 minutes, I'm even more excited to dive in. I've got a little mini factory tour. I've heard some of the backstory stuff. It's going to be challenging to fit all this in. I want to start. I don't always start with origin stories. A lot of times I think we spend too much time on them. I just don't. But I think yours, I would love to hear yours, because I think it's more interesting to tee this up really nicely. So talk about quickly the origin behind how you invented the idea, how the business got going, and then tie in maybe the viral video as well.
I am a 3D knit programmer by trade. And at the time that I invented the Swaddlini, I had been building 3D knit solutions for the office furniture industry for about 3 years and decided I wanted to knit more than just office furniture. So I started Knit It. Like, how will you knit it? The idea was designers and engineers would sit around the table thinking, how should we fabricate this? Should we use a woven, a leather, plastic? Oh, should we knit it? We'll call Knit It. So that's how Knit It came to be. And I was just a contractor. People would ask me to knit shoe uppers, office furniture, aerospace solutions, literally air ducts for aerospace out of Kevlar that then with a low melt polymer that they put on a form and then heat treat. So like crazy stuff. Then I became a mom, and I became a mom for the first time 2 years into my entrepreneurial journey with Knit It. And it was very hard. I had no maternity leave because I was an entrepreneur, and my husband had a high level position, and it was just like really stressful. And he wasn't sleeping. He would sleep in 20 minute increments, and he would escape his swaddle and then cry and then scratch his face and then cry. And but he loved being swaddled, but he just also feel trapped. So I thought if I could make him something that hugged him and allowed him the freedom of movement, he would sleep better. And sure enough, I prototyped. It took me a couple weeks. I put him in the first Swaddlini prototype, and he slept through the night for the first time since I became a mom. So I got my first night of sleep. So did my husband, Brad. And we wake up in the morning, we run to the crib in a panic because it was our first time. Like, oh my gosh, he didn't wake up. Is he okay? And there he is, just sleeping peacefully. And in that moment, Brad grabbed my arm and he said, Liz, you're going to sell a million of these.
Like, we can sell these for $10,000 a piece to new parents.
In that moment, I knew it would be a lot of work. But I'm an R&D girly. I thought it would be a lot of, process work, testing it, refining it. I had no idea the work that it takes to market and sell something that is both new and innovative. So I actually spent a year marketing and developing this product to make it what it is, testing it. Of course, I already had all those relationships, and I launched it a year after my son was born. I launched it and I won some pitch competitions, which helped me fund my utility patent. It did well. I did almost every single in-person baby show all over the country between 2018 and 2019. I secured some contracts with QVC and HSN. I was one of their first baby products in their baby campaigns, and Bye Bye Baby. But I was drop shipping and giving them 50%. Made no sense. So, and my insurance had to be well beyond my exposure because of these big companies I was working with. So September 2020, I pulled the plug on everything. I'm selling 30 units on my website a month. And then TikTok. I start posting in TikTok early January because it was my New Year's resolution to quit my TikTok addiction that I had started that season of life. And I thought if I make a business page, you know, I'll hate it, just like I hate Facebook and Pinterest and all the other things I do for my business. And so I started posting. But what was different this time around is people were watching and asking questions and caring and like, how does this go on? So I post a video that I'd taken a year prior of me putting the product on my second son, and it got 1 million views within 24 hours. And I had 341 sales from all over the world. That month we shipped over 800 units. Wow. Out of my garage. At that moment, it went in January 2021, we were manufacturing in my garage. So I remember it went viral on a Friday. By Monday, I had Eden coming, who was the daughter of my mom's friend from church, like working in my garage. And meanwhile, I had a full-time job and two kids. So I had a full-time W-2 job when all of this was happening.
That's insanity. And so the viral video takes off. You start getting orders in. And you had mentioned to me earlier, kind of before we started recording, that one of the hardest moments, if not the hardest moment in your business journey, kind of happened during that phase.
Yeah, it was a few months after. So Eden wanted to spend some time working up. So I had been let go. A few months after that, I was let go from my W-2 job. Probably wasn't paying much attention to it. honestly, I've been fired before. I have a very funny story. I've been fired from all three corporate jobs I've ever had. I think I'm a great employee. Someone was asking me, like, do you think it's because you're just not meant to be an employee? I'm like, I'm a great employee. They just disagreed, like, that I was a great employee.
They're just running, all of them were running their business wrong, obviously.
No, they felt like, oh, were you focused too much on your own thing and you couldn't give? No, I gave 100% to my jobs. I thought I was great. But like, you know, anyway. So Eden goes to, like, she wanted to learn how to do wine and, like, make wine in Northern Michigan. It wasn't her thing. She came back to me. So she still works for me, actually, the girl who started my garage. But anyway, at this moment, she wasn't working for me. I was all by myself. I had another viral video and was making sales, and I was really excited about it. But I was also updating my website banner. Simple thing, but I was doing it in WooCommerce, and I asked my IT department, hey, how do I do this? And they told me to do it in a way that restarted the system from order zero. So it was constantly losing shipments. I think I lost about 200 shipments, and I didn't realize it until the customer service emails came in like a couple of weeks later. And I didn't sleep for 3 days. I went through everything line by line, PayPal and Stripe, making sure everybody got their product. And of course, a lot of them justly wanted refunds because I make a time-sensitive product. That situation brought me to my knees. I was crying. I was thinking I wasn't meant to do this because at this moment, I'm going through this stressful thing and there's no one to help me but myself. And I just kind of made me think, like, what is the point of this? I told I called my therapist that I hadn't seen in a long time, you know, and said, I need to talk through something. And I talked through everything. And he said, look, Liz, I know you're a Christian. Like, have you given your company formerly to Christ? And I, at this point, I had not. Like, of course, I think, you know, everything is a gift. And like, I'm, you know, but I hadn't formerly just given my business over to God. And so I did that. And a few things shifted. One, I wasn't looking at my business like a curse. I looked at it as a blessing. And the whole horrible experience I had, I looked at, you know what? thank God it happened now when I'm small and I can manage this and it's not going to damage me too much. It's just a really, really hard week. And then it also enabled me to just kind of put the pressure of failure and success off of me because it's not mine. I'm just a steward of this brilliant idea and business that God has given me and entrusted me with. And I need to be a good steward of this idea and of this business. So ultimately, it just helped me view my business as a blessing and not a curse.
Yeah, I love the reframing. And you were kind of just off the cuff. You're like, hey, you mentioned 3D knitting when we were talking before. You're like, hey, do you want to see a tour of my warehouse? And I was like, yeah. And so you took the laptop, you took me back and showed me all around. I have never heard this term 3D knitting before. I was assuming, and forgive me for saying this again, because I know it pained you the first time I said it. I was like, I was just assuming you made all these things in Asia or overseas somewhere else, shipped
Never.
Them in, and you just face just fell. You're like, how could you think this of me and my product line? But you are, there's all of these, let me describe to people what I saw. You've got all these huge, long, skinny machines that are printing and creating all of the swaddles that you sell and a lot of the products that you sell. So you're textile manufacturing in America, which is really cool. Talk a little bit, if you would, about that, like the machines you use, the what you're able to make. I just think it's so cool because I was not expecting that.
Yeah. So 3D knitting is a bit of a ambiguous buzzword in the textile industry. It can mean a lot of different things. I like to use the phrase SGAM, or soft good additive manufacturing. So we are using knitting machines that have traditionally been used to knit sweaters in pieces and then linked together by hand. But we program it in a different way where it just comes out in one piece. So when I said, you know, I had this idea for my son, I had this 3D knit idea, and I had the tools, the software, the machine at my fingertips in my studio to just, you know, program it via two-dimensional means. And then when it comes out of the machine, there's no cutting, no sewing, no waste, no post-knit labor. Once the swaddolini comes out of the machine, we pull through the end at the very top and serge a tag on, quality check. We heat treat it so it shrinks up for the customer, and then package it. So yeah, it's an additive manufacturing process. And it's the only additive manufacturing process that can be flexible.
When these print out the swaddles, do they have to print out just completely contiguous fabric, or are they like a shirt like this? Could they sew a shirt like the one I'm wearing?
It's knit in one piece.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It comes out in one piece. Now it takes a while. Like for a shirt like what you're wearing, it would take like an hour, hour and a half to knit.
Okay, but they could do, so it's not just single piece. They can.
This technology exists today. The problem is we have a culture problem where we aren't spending enough money on clothes to warrant technology taking over. Like if I wanted to, I don't manufacture anything for fashion because there's no margin there. I mean, I'm not saying never, it's just not happening right now. And I certainly couldn't afford to do a contract, but there might be room for vertically integrated companies like mine to make a profit off of doing this. Because I have everything under one roof, I mean, we sell the product, market the product, make the product, quality check the product, package and ship all under one roof. So that makes things easier.
Yeah. And I imagine people are generally, when it comes to products for their babies, they tend to be a little discriminating. How much of your brand kind of promise and the appeal of it to your customers is that, hey, it's made here in the USA by a mom who really cares deeply about kids. Like, is that, how much do you hear from that from your customers?
Not hardly at all. Even though I do make content around it, stories around it. I haven't done this in a while, but I imagine it would be even worse this time. Like I used to cold call customers right after they ordered and ask them, why did you order? And none of them knew that it was made in America. It's not the consumer's responsibility to care about that, you know? As long as you make a good product for good value, you're successful. And people have asked me, why don't you outsource? Because I could have scaled faster. There were so many, So 2025 was a really tough year for us because in January of 2024, I had my fourth baby who was literally the cutest baby ever. And my sales, I think also because I was a story brand at this point, like people were following me because I owned a baby brand and I had a baby. My social media was insane. And I had only just started Facebook ads, just started that year doing it, like late Q4 2023, I started Facebook ads with a company that did not know how to manage it. So I did that and sales were like 2024 was our rocket ship year. So what did my husband do? Who's, you know, he's ran $100 million company before in automotive. He's a operations guy, mechanical engineer from Waterloo by trade. He like doubled our capacity. Why not? Because these machines take 6 months to make. So we got a loan for like $1 million and we double our capacity. What happens in 2025? Like sales dropped by almost half. Like it was so bad. And like so what happened in November of 2025, which was just recently, I feel like it was just a few quarters ago, yeah. My husband was looking at getting another job. And I was like, are we going to lose this? And he was looking at jobs. I was, you know, freaking out about how we're going to sustain this thing. We're getting leaner, 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 cutting. And then a viral video happened. By the grace of God. And I really like looking back, it was a God thing. God did know what he was doing because I think we had so much success. We were making decisions that I think inflated us, like inflated our spending unnecessarily. When we went through what we went through in 2025, we had to get really lean and really hands dirty into the nitty gritty details of our business in a way we had not done yet. So now, we're growing and we're back, we're better than 2024 numbers.
Let's start to interrupt. What was it that caused the sales to drop by half?
Well, social media, because so what was wrong is that in 2024, all the growth was because of me posting three times a day myself as the CEO and a mother of four. That's not sustainable to make content at that like creative level multiple times a day and never taking a break. So we found someone who had the skills to take that off my plate. Thank goodness. And it took us a while to develop a process, but I do not post on Swaddleini at all anymore. I'm focused on other things and I don't post at all. But it took a year and a half to get there. So yeah, there's a system now. I'm not going to say anyone can do it, but we're trying to get there.
Yeah. And so we're posting, had to take a break. Business goes 50%. You're able to build that capacity back up. And you had an interesting thing where I feel like one of the spiciest recurring themes of forum discussions that we have is like, hey, I hired this marketing agency and I had great expectations. And then 9 months later, you know, I'm kind of like huddled in the fetal position in the corner crying. And you guys went through that. You had a big experience where you hired someone and it didn't work out. What I think is interesting is you said, when I was kind of doing all the stalking and prep for this of your background, that you have a programmer that now runs your paid ads and media. Is that right? And can you talk about why you have a programmer in that role?
I meet this guy and I'm immediately like impressed. And I'm like, nice app, whatever, I'll try it. And would you please audit my horrible digital marketing company? And so I paid him $500. He audited my company and that I was doing business with and came back, oh, your Google tag isn't connected. And I'm like, that is impossible. I gave them all the information on how to do that. How is this possible? So they've just been dumping all my money down a toilet basically because nothing was optimized. I brought this finding to them and they said, no, we didn't do anything wrong. And I bring him into this meeting where they made themselves look extremely stupid. The company was Dexia. I'm not going to like protect them. They were horrible. They were so bad that later, once they realized that they were at fault, they apologized to me. And they said, what can we do to, I know we're never working together again, but like what can we do? And I said, you're going to hire Levi as a consultant to make sure you're not f***ing over any of your other customers. And they did. Honestly, I really appreciated that. So he audited all of their customers, told them what they were doing wrong, which ones were like in the red and which ones were okay. And they even offered him a job, which he refused. Thank goodness, because I needed him to do more work for me. So his marketing company is now called Reinforce advertising. His app does not exist anymore. He is focused on helping Swadalini grow. And I also introduced him to one of my good friends, and he helps run her business as well.
Got it. Okay. And so he's somebody who built his own kind of partner or business. You contract with him. He runs a lot of your stuff. And it sounds like you, I don't know if you did this with him or with someone else, but did you build out your own attribution model?
Yes.
How do you guys, because I remember seeing something that you mentioned that sounded interesting.
Oh, it's so cool. So because he actually knows how to program, like we, especially coming out of that bad relationship with the marketing firm, I didn't want to trust the data coming out of Facebook or coming out of Google. So he built an attribution model where he can feed in the data we're getting from Google. And well, actually we don't do Google ads anymore. He puts in the data from Meta. He puts in the data from our socials and from any trackable source to then establish a baseline of, you know, what are our sales without ads? Like what sales could have probably been made anyway without ads? So that was what I'm looking for. And it's never perfect, but I did set for like in the beginning, I was still skeptical and I was like, okay, give me order numbers that you're saying came directly from Facebook ads. And I followed up with those customers. They all said they clicked on an ad. I was pretty impressed by that because I wasn't sure if would they say, oh, I saw just your video. No, they clicked on an ad. So that really helped me trust the process. And we still had a bumpy ride. Like he was with us in 2025 when things were rough, right? One thing I learned is like when things were really good in 2024, I was still nervous. And I was asking the company I was paying a ton of money to, like, why are things going well? And of course they were taking all the credit. And I'm like, but my videos are getting millions of views every single day. So I'm pretty sure that's me sacrificing my time with my baby to do work. So I really hate it. The quickest way to get fired for me to fire you is take credit for work that you're not doing. So I really hate that. So this guy, Levi, just takes a holistic view of the business. And I'm able to talk to him about, okay, look, this PR effort, how can you get me numbers on like, how good is this doing for our brand? And like, it's very, very helpful. And sometimes he'll say, hey, we have to try things. Like if, you know, maybe it doesn't work, but maybe it has like a halo effect elsewhere. And we have enough data right now where I am fine with our $15,000 a month we spend on Facebook. I am totally okay with that.
You mentioned PR. I think you have an interesting PR story. This kind of, it seems like it's kind of evolved over the last 3-4 months. So I'm curious to hear how you're thinking about it now. You have spent, I would say most kind of e-com owners, people in our community, they don't really talk about traditional PR reaching out. A handful do, but it's not like a super common marketing technique. But you spent a lot of time with someone on retainer to go out and get traditional, you know, articles, you know, press mentions, things like that. And it seemed like it worked. You got them and you were showing up at Gemini and LLM, but you weren't sure if like, hey, is this a result of our blog posts? Because it seemed like a lot of the reference comments when the LLMs would cite you would be popping up and point to your site versus all the new PR that you got. Anyway, I'm curious, how have, you know, 3, 4, 5 months in, however long it's been, what's your take on PR? Did it pay off? Do you wish you hadn't done it? What do you feel like that?
I really want to be asked this again in like 6 months. But basically, I hired that person for 8 months. I hired her in November because she was like, oh, I can get you in the Black Friday, 10 things you need to buy for your baby on Black Friday list. She got me into one. It was in Spanish, but like, okay. I think she was, honestly, I don't think there's anyone in the baby industry that could have done PR better. But ultimately, when I would ask her, like, hey, how do you feel about, you know, how you've done? And for me, she did what she said she'd do. She got me into 3 or 4 things, but they weren't the things I wanted. Like, I want to be in an article that pops up when you're researching top 10 best swaddles. And she got me into one list on Today's Parents, which honestly, that was good. That was well done. That was what I was paying her to do. And she did it. And from what I've heard, like, you can be engaged with PR companies for like a year and not get into one publication. She did hustle. Okay. So I don't know. I don't think the work she did for me was worth the money I paid her, but I do think the money I spent with her was worth it for everything that I learned. about PR. So I think I would recommend engaging with someone like her, but maybe for only 3 or 4 months to learn what you need to learn. Because it gets to a certain point, it's the same 30, 40 journalists that are writing the same type of articles year after year. And it's not hard to get their emails because I did fire her for the same reason I fired the marketing company I mentioned. She took credit for something I spent years working on. So the only thing she did is like, I gave her my Forbes contact and she helped just press a few buttons and hooked them up in AWIN. And then the article came out, but I had fostered that connection and built that relationship and sent the product out a year before I even onboarded her to do our PR. And then she's like, hey, let me check on this. Let me try to onboard them in AWIN. Maybe it'll work. So I did that. And then she took credit for it and put it in her list of things that she's done for me. And then she would also just give me, she would waste time talking about ideas for my product development. And they were all bad ideas, a waste of my time. And then I'm having to explain my business to her and why it's a bad idea. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. So yeah, I feel like when you hire someone to do a very specific thing, they should just focus on that specific thing. So yeah, so now I promoted my customer service person who was doing influencer outreach and just killing it. So she trained up someone else at customer service. And now she does influencer outreach and PR outreach. She only really started this week, but she's doing a phenomenal job. And I do believe in a few months, we're going to hack it. We're going to figure out how to get, how to manage our own PR in-house. And I am extremely excited about this.
Got it. So it sounds like good lessons, not worth having someone else do it. Probably makes sense to do it in-house once you get the ropes down.
Yeah, but you might need, I think you should, for learning the expectations and just I don't get to own the contacts, right? So we have the names and the addresses of all these journalists that we've sent product to over the last 8 months. And we just found their names and emails on things like Quoted and Muckrack and things like that. And now we're just reaching out and saying, hey, we've taken a PR in-house and we have a new product coming up. Would you like to see it? And if they don't get back, we're going to ship them more product anyway. We'll see how that goes.
Nice. I'm curious how you think about when so the swaddles that you sell about in the $50 plus or minus price range, people, I'm sure they buy more than one with the way Baby Spit Up on stuff, but then also your window, right? It's not like people are going to be customers for life. Maybe they've got another kid coming, but maybe in a best case scenario, you've got a 5-year window, but it's not huge. So you don't have a small, tiny AOV, but it's also not massive and the window is a little smaller. How do you, from a marketing perspective, how do you think about profitable acquisition in terms of what you're spending on paid in terms of organic social? I guess what I'm really trying to get at is what's most effective for you with this business model?
Yeah. When my ROAS starts getting down to $4, I start freaking out. I don't like that. Even though I know that it has a halo effect on Amazon and Target, I don't care. I don't want it under $4. So that's my threshold. So on $55, is $11 of ad spend.
That's pretty good. I think a lot of people listening will hear that. If I had a 4x ROAS, that would be, sign me up.
Okay. But I am making it in America. My people make good money. So rent's not cheap, all that stuff. But anyway, as far as what I can spend, I think we've dialed that in, but also I feel like one way it affects our customer service is I don't really allow returns. If their baby's gotten too big and they only just got a small, we'll do an exchange. I will do anything for a customer, but a refund. Our refund is 2% on our website and it's 10% on Amazon and everywhere else because, people just like to return product. That's the culture we live in. But for me, my returning customer rate is 3%. So I'm not really motivated to just allow returns willy-nilly because I'm never seeing that. I'm a one-hit wonder. This is my one time to connect you with you. Just let me solve the problem. Give me the information. What is wrong? Why aren't you happy? And then let me make you happy. But I don't do refunds for that reason.
Got it. Do you get much pushback from that? It's one thing I've been.
My PR person, she didn't like that. She's like, you have all these, people saying, oh, your return policy is bad. And I'm like, yeah, well, the thing is, it's no different than all of my competitors' return policy. So, but my competitors, most of them sell on Amazon or in stores that do honor that. And I am working on my distribution, but for D2C, it doesn't make sense. Like it doesn't make sense because I only have this very short 8-week window. And really I try to sell to moms who are pregnant because once you're in that postpartum haze, you can't be sold to. You've got too much going on. I don't want to sell to you when you're in the most vulnerable and stressed part of your life. Like I'm hoping my ads wind up on people's For You pages when they're pregnant, you know, not when they are in the thick of it.
Yeah. You've built out and talking about moms and kind of what they need and postpartum. I want to talk about the documentary in just a minute here. But before we hit that, I want to talk about YouTube. You've got, you know, close to 200,000 subscribers on YouTube and to build that channel in, you know, the 5-ish, 4-ish years to that level is pretty impressive. What has worked? How have you been able to be so successful in building that audience on YouTube?
I was part of YouTube Shorts when it was in beta. So I think there is something to be said for following those little marketing gurus who are like, you know, Instagram's not dead. Go post on Instagram. Like hearing that in 2021 helped me go, oh, okay, I'll go start posting on my Instagram. And I did that religiously because the marketing gurus were telling me to do that. And you know what? It worked because there was a period of time where my TikTok tanked and then my Instagram like shot up and I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. I'm not hurting because I listened to those gurus. And then they said, oh, YouTube Shorts, don't sleep on YouTube Shorts. It's in beta. So I started doing that and that is what took off. And I actually love the community that we've built on YouTube. The comments are really encouraging mostly. We also have like 200,000 followers on Facebook, but like the comments are not all are usually from people who don't know what swaddling is and have never swaddled and are like grandparent age. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't need to involve myself there. Although we did have like a hater who was misidentified as a super fan because she posted on all of her name was Linda. And like, I think I had a Linda type on YouTube too, who would just post the same hate comments on all my videos. And somebody's like, hey guys, I don't see Linda's post yet. Is she okay? People like look for the hate comments, which is kind of funny.
So prevalent. They've become almost like an anti mascot for your brand.
And I know. And I really wanted to send her like an adult swaddle or something as a joke, but I would like totally actually send it to her. But I couldn't figure out her information.
Did you ever think through like, yeah, obviously problematic, you know, not something you'd necessarily want, but I think the flip side is if you can flip that person, if you can take the person that's most critical to your brand, flip them. I mean, that probably is such a powerful thing to do for your product, for your brand, for did you ever think about trying to really invest time and trying to?
Many times. Actually one that it just pops in my head for the last 4 years, I've gone to the All Babies and Kids Expo in Vegas, where you get a chance to engage with small mom and pop brick and mortar stores. And there was this one person that I had seen every single year and she'd go by my booth. But one year I finally brought an iPad that showed a baby experiencing the Moro reflex. So the Moro reflex is that sense of falling that babies have when they're born. And we know now that's good for their brain development. And a lot of swaddles restrict that too much. So some people who think swaddles restrict the Moro reflex are like anti-swaddle people. But my product allows for that to happen, but because it hugs the baby, they're soothed back to sleep. When she saw that in action, the baby having the Moro reflex, being soothed back to sleep, she was like, oh, I get it now. I thought it was like all the other swaddles. And she placed an order.
Oh, cool. Okay. So you definitely have flipped a few.
Yeah. And I tried to flip someone on TikTok that made a negative video about me and she didn't understand. And I need to actually follow up on that. So thank you for reminding me.
I want to talk about documentary. So you put together this documentary this spring and I watched the trailer. I did not watch the full thing. I should have, and I hopefully will. The trailer from even just looking at it, it doesn't look like, I mean, it looks like a very high production, very well thought out video. And it's following a mother through her, from what I can tell, kind of the early, you know, the early birthdays, postpartum, and what the challenges are, the struggles, trying to answer the question, you know, what do moms really need after birth? Anyway, I'm curious what the goal, the vision was and how it is performed. Because I recently did something that was a big video project. And part of me, the reason that I was able to sign off on the budget for it, even though not being sure it was going to pay off, was like, this is fun. This is interesting. I want to do it. It's kind of cool. But also with the hope of like, maybe this will be a really great asset. So I'm curious, what were the goals, visions, and how has it been performing?
Okay. So the first goal was, how do I add value to my customers who are increasingly turning off their phones, which is great for humanity, but also bad for my brand outreach. Because right now I'm spending the money on the Meta ads. I'm posting on social media. How am I going to reach those moms? And obviously the answer is long form content. And I'm like, okay, I need to provide value. And one of the things I've always been passionate about is postpartum, because I invented the Swaddlini in my postpartum haze when I had postpartum anxiety and I didn't even know what was going on in my body, in my mind, everything. I actually eventually, a girlfriend recommended me the book, The First 40 Days, written by a Chinese American to bring the Chinese practices around postpartum support to Americans who don't take care of themselves and don't prioritize the rest and recovery. And that really changed my entire postpartum in such a positive way. So I wanted to share that. So I started by pitching an idea to the author of that book. I found her on LinkedIn. I pitched this idea as if I was HBO. She said yes. And she ended up being just as kind and warm and nurturing in person as she was in her books. And we picked a mother, like through some applications that we received through an ad I put on Instagram. We picked this other, another Chinese American who was going through her second postpartum. But even though it's in her culture to do the rest and recovery, her mom wasn't there. So that's a huge piece of the story, is her relationship with her mother. And not a lot of moms get to see that portrayed, that negative relationship. And so it has a big impact in that way. And, you know, when you're in, like, nobody has a good postpartum experience. I think part of the reason I made this is I tried to make a perfect postpartum for myself and I failed. And I thought, well, maybe I can curate a perfect postpartum for someone else. And I paid for her to go to the postnatal retreat center and in San Francisco. That I wanted to choose someone who lived in the vicinity of that postnatal care center so they could like be away from their chores. So I was trying to create the perfect postpartum. What I learned is there is no such thing. And actually what makes the biggest difference in your postpartum recovery is reaching out and being clear about what you need from your partner, from your friends, from your family, and then being able to receive that help. So Alice did the work. She hosted the nesting parties. She reached out and asked for the things she needed, like toddler activity kits for her older kid and freezer meals from the First 40 Days cookbook and, you know, and like help around the house, or, hey, I just want to go out to lunch and like see you and talk. Like, she did that. And she was surprised to learn, you know, her support circle was always there. They were just they were waiting for the signal of like, what can we do? And we also address a few things of like, how can you, as the person who wants to support the woman in your life having a baby, how do you do that? So we interviewed a postpartum therapist as well to give some guidance on that. We interviewed a lot of really great people who work in this space. So I'm happy with it. I will be coming out with another iteration of the documentary. I mean, it is out free on YouTube, but I'm going to add animations to it and make it even more professional looking, because I want to apply to film festivals with it.
Very cool. And I know it's been really early. I think you just released within the last, you know, 1 or 2 months.
Yeah.
What's been the initial reaction? Have you had a lot of your customers talk about, like, how do you feel like it landed out of the gates?
I think because, you know, I started it without really understanding the ending. Some people watch part of it and they're like, this is just for rich people. And it's like, no, the whole point at the end is like, actually, it's the community you already have. So what I learned in the first few weeks is like, I need to be careful with my messaging around this. First, it's not a film about postpartum anxiety or depression. We're not touching that. We're touching the solution, because if PPD and postpartum anxiety is the problem, the solution is postpartum support. And how do we do that? And we cannot advocate for something that we don't have a definition of. So the whole point of this film is to define what is postpartum support. And obviously that means something different to everyone. So we explore a lot of different themes. And the way we do that is by, you know, learning about Alice and what she needs and how she prepares for her postpartum support and how she lives it out in the moment. And then we return 40 days later to ask her like, hey, what went right? What went sideways? And I think what was surprising is like her husband really was there for her, but it was hard for her to see it, you know? And that's like a tale as old as time. I think there's room to do more work like this of capturing women in this vulnerable spot and learning how they're handling it. We have a video that went viral recently on the Holding Mother account where I video a friend of mine who had a nesting party like Alice did. And people signed up to like do bedtime routine. That was me. Some to do laundry and watch the baby while she can shower and stuff like that. So I showed up to do my bedtime routine, which went very well. I watched her baby from 8 to 11 p.m. When I left, he slept through the night.
Did you have a couple of secret weapon swaddles as well that may have helped with that?
Of course, he was wearing the swaddling.
A quiver of like 40 swaddles to find the perfect one.
Yeah. So it was great. But I made a video of her talking about this list and how when she talks about to people about how, you know, people in my community signed up to help me in all these ways, they're just shocked. And like, I want to make this like a cultural norm here where we are showing up for new mothers in our lives.
Well, I think one of the things too is I have three kids, youngest is 8. And recently went over to a good friend's house who has a 9-month-old. Even after just like 20 minutes, I was like, oh, wow. Like this is a lot. I've done it 3 times as a dad and as a family, but you forget like how just all encompassing and how much work it is until you go back in that environment and then you see it, but then you have to, you know, it's not you again. So you leave and then you forget about half an hour later. Anyway, my point being, I think a video like that is a really cool thing because it kind of, it is a good reminder of something that's easy to forget once you're past that stage. I think humans, we have such an amazing ability to go through really hard things and then you remember them, but you kind of forget the visceral, just painful parts of them.
Well, it's your body protecting you. So yeah, and thank you for saying that because ultimately what I want this film to do is I want it to help us focus more on the mother and less on the baby. Even though I have a brand that is built for baby. Ultimately, it is for the mom. I want the mom to get rest. I want the mom to get recovery. And everyone is so excited to hold the baby, but who is holding the mom?
Yeah, I love it. Liz, tell people where, you know, if they've got a newborn or if more likely, they maybe know someone who has a newborn that could use something like this to get some sleep, bring a little sanity in their lives. Where can they find out more about your brand, about Swaddleini? Where can they pick up some products? And then we will also link up to the documentary. So maybe you can mention the name of it, but links for all will be in the show notes. But yeah, give people a quick roadmap where they can find everything.
You can get Swaddleini online at Swaddleini, SWADDELINI.com. And we are also on Amazon. We're a little more expensive there, but you get free shipping. We're also on Target Plus, and we're in a few boutiques here and there. If your local baby boutique doesn't have us, you're welcome to tell them they should reach out to us and sell our product. And then you can watch Holding Mother on the Swaddleini YouTube channel.
Amazing. And again, all links will be in the show notes. Liz, thank you. Congrats on building such a cool brand, making it here in the US. I think that's awesome and helping in a really critical time in parents and moms, especially lives. So thank you. And also thanks for being part of the community. You've been amazing having you and the stuff you shared. Like there's a bunch of things I didn't even have a chance to talk to you about. Maybe next time we'll talk about how weightlifting helped you become a better founder. That's a cool thread to pull on. But yeah, just really appreciate having you in the community. Thank you.
Oh my God. Well, I love ECF. I've received so much from it. And I understand why everyone's obsessed with it. It's incredible. And it's really been the gap that's bridged me from like, because once you, there's so much support for businesses under a million. And then once you're in like the 3 million mark, all the support goes away. And so it's like, it's been great. So thank you, Andrew, for having me on. And I so appreciate it. Thank you.
A final note before we wrap up, e-com growth, as you may know, consumes cash, and it does faster than most people plan for, especially if you're growing. So if you're scaling hard and you haven't gotten intentional about your cash position and cash forecasting, now is the time before you enter crisis mode. And the Financial Mastery series from Ecom Fuel covers this, how to grow without hollowing out your balance sheet, when and how to start extracting capital, all the financial frameworks that operators at your level need. It's a free course you can take at ecommercefuel.com/mastery. And if you're a 7 or 8 figure owner looking for a peer group, check out our community at ecommercefuel.com. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.